Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to So You Want to Be in Ministry. I'm Tim, and today we get the opportunity to talk to Mark Warnock. We had him previously in episode 7, if you want to go back and check out the previous conversation about a residency program. But today we get to talk to him about soul rest and soul care and making sure that you're taking care of your soul. And as you'll hear him say repeatedly, you are responsible for your soul and taking care of it. And I'm excited about this opportunity to talk to him. It is, he has so much great insight into that. But before we get into it, I want to remind you that we are all about educating you if you're thinking about getting into ministry, equipping you if you're already in, encouraging you if you're just having a rough season and you're considering jumping out. And we want to be able to empower you to follow godly leaders well. So if you're somebody that just attends church, wants to know what a godly leader looks like, how they can even support as a volunteer or a ministry leader, or just somebody in the church that desires to follow godly leaders, we want to empower you to be able to do that as well. Mark is the residency pastor. He's over the entire residency program, a family church down in West Palm Beach. It's a pleasure to talk to him. I'm so glad he's back. Here's Mark. Well, hey, Mark. Glad to have you back. You are the first return interview guy.
All right.
Yeah, you made it back.
Honored to be back, Tim. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those of you that don't know, Mark is the residency director for the Family Church Network down in South Florida. And you probably heard that if you heard the previous interview, but we're looking forward to having you back. And we're going to deal with a very serious topic. It's just necessary. I know it's necessary in my own life even right now. And so I'm very excited to have you on to talk about soul care.
Soul care. Yeah, man. We need it. And it's, you know what, part of what got me thinking about this, you know, in residency, we're preparing people for ministry. Okay. And like soul care failures are legendary in ministry.
Yes.
You know, we've all heard the stories of the guys who, like, they're going great guns and then they burn out, bang out because of some sort of unhealth. And when you drill into it, a lot of times the problem at the bottom is they were not taking proper care of their own souls and they overextended and it's bad. I talked about this with my residency students and I told them the story of Robert Murray McShane, the old Scottish like pastor leader. Like, okay. He's got a whole, there's a read through the Bible plan that is like his plan that people still follow all the time. Well, he died at 29 because he worked himself to death. And the famous quote from him is, "God gave me a horse to ride and a message to deliver. Alas, I have killed the horse and I cannot deliver the message." Wow. And like, I'm just like, my goodness, you know, I'm at the point, Tim, where, so I'm 53.
Okay.
At this point, my perspective on ministry is I don't have to accomplish massive things for the kingdom, but bro, I have got to finish well. I just want to make it to the end, still loving and trusting Jesus and serving him the best I can. And so I'm super motivated about this. I remember when I was in my 20s, young Christian, young pastor, I started seeing these guys that I really looked up to, like heroes in the faith, all start washing out in midlife.
Yes.
And so like they were like my age now.
Yeah.
And they made bad decisions about managing themselves and their lives and their morality and their decisions, and it blew up their ministries. And I started praying then. I started saying, Lord, I'm gonna get to that age of life and I'm gonna have the same weaknesses and same temptations as those men. Would you please help me when I get there not to do that? So like I'm living now in prayers that I prayed for myself like 20 years ago.
Okay. I agree. I mean, if you go to any of our logos or anything on this podcast, you see the finish line tape everywhere. And so it is all about finish. We want to help you finish well, whatever that means. It's going to mean different things for each one of us, but Yeah, that's what we want. And so this is critical to get there, like critical to get there.
I agree.
I've even heard one pastor say, I can't remember exactly who it was, maybe Kerry Newhoff, I listen to him a lot, but he said when he had burnout, he's never quite been able to get back to the energy he had before burnout. Yeah. He's like, I've corrected a lot of things. It's not a problem anymore, but I've never quite been able to capture the energy I had before that moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to that. I would say that that's even true for me on a personal story of when I was around 38, I didn't experience burnout, but I just kind of, I was done. And I was still fighting to stay with Jesus. Like I was fighting every day.
Yeah.
To the point where my supervisor even was like, our staff needed to see somebody that was having a rough season and kept fighting. And so they, because I viewed it as a wasted year and he viewed it as like, no, that was extremely valuable to, for our staff to see that. But I would say the same thing. I haven't quite made it back to the energy that I had previous to that season. And maybe it's just because of age, but I don't know. So talk to us about some of those failures then. Like they really do plague pastors. I think pastors that desire to do a lot of godly things and good things for the kingdom of God, this plagues us because maybe we feel too much is on our shoulders or we're trying to just soak everything we can up. What are some of those failures that we experience or navigate through?
You know, Tim, as you were talking, I was thinking about the analogy of a marathon. Okay. Like, now, I've done a 10K. I'm not a marathoner, so like this is not personal experience at all, but I sort of know about it, is that, you know, if you're going to run 26.2 miles, like the first two are going to feel very different from mile 18, 19, 20. You know, famously, they talk about runners hitting the wall, and even though they may be moving forward at the same pace that they were, you know, 10 miles previous, the inner experience of it is different.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens. I think a lot of times there's a kind of drain that ministry does to us. Mm. And we're not aware of the way it affects us below the surface.
Okay.
I think one factor in this is that men tend not to be as self-aware about their emotions. Like this is an area that I've had to grow in. As a matter of fact, I'm in a coaching process right now with respect to being aware of and managing my own emotions. Because you think about guys who get to midlife, they have a great ministry, it's thriving, it's going, and all of a sudden there's an affair or they're embezzling money or they're caught with like hookers or drugs or things like that. You're like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And the answer is there was this emotional drain that was happening underneath the surface. They felt this need to kind of keep up this brave, oh, everything is perfect face. Mm-hmm. Right. And then like, that's got to go somewhere. And so they find these unhealthy outlets for it. There's a guy, I'll anonymize this enough. Was a second staff member at a church that I'm aware of and did great and whatever. And then one day FBI shows up and arrests him for passing bad checks because he had a gambling addiction that nobody knew about. And so like these are the things, and like, we don't think we're vulnerable to this. Like, no, I'm in ministry. That would never happen to me. But it happens to guys all the time. Because they're not paying attention to, like Paul said to Timothy, he said, watch your life and your doctrine closely. And we know about watching the doctrine, like there are doctrine police everywhere. And we're like, oh, doctrine, we're doing that. But what about watching your life?
Yeah.
Like who's, like in a healthy marriage, I think, like you experience this, Tim, like your wife's paying attention to you. You're like, and she's like, something's different. Once a year, you get in this funk, you're in your funk again, Tim. Okay. Well, that's because she's watching your life.
Yeah.
We have a responsibility to watch our own lives and have other people in our lives as mirrors to watch us and make sure we're okay. I've built this into our residency program.
Okay.
I have a coaching process that all my residents are in. And the sole reason for that just to make sure they're doing okay.
So that would make sense too in a residency program, because they're experiencing this all for the first time, where it's going to be draining up maybe immediately, because they're just like, whoa, I did not expect this.
That's
that makes a lot of sense. And just to confirm, we were talking before I hit start or record or whatever. Yes, my wife has let me know I'm in my annual season. And so if you're out there wondering, like, Tim obviously has this all together, that's why he's got Mark on the podcast. No, I have Mark on the podcast because I'm learning this.
Well, and I've learned it by not having it all together, right? Yeah. I mean, and I think in some ways, like, you get into ministry and, like, you don't know what your limits are. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to learn them as you go. But boy, that's why you have to watch your life. It's why you have to watch your life. And so, a good initial question maybe to ask is, how are you watching your life, and who is helping you watch your life?
Okay. How do you make sure good people are in place? Because if you're not super self-aware, I mean, we're getting into EQ a little bit here, but if I'm not super self-aware, you have enough awareness to know that about yourself. How do you have the awareness to know who's aware of your life? How do you build some of that?
No, it's a good question. And like on the way to answering that, like one of the points that I make about this is soul care, like, and by soul care, I mean, you're caring for your own soul.
Okay.
It is your responsibility. It's not your pastor's responsibility. It's not your wife's responsibility. It's not the church's responsibility. It's not your accountability's responsibility, your accountability partner's responsibility. It is yours. Okay. It's kind of like if you're a soldier in the U.S. Army, you go to basic training and you do your AIT. And the whole purpose of that is so that you can have all the skills to take care of yourself, to make sure you're squared away, right? You can fight, you can obey orders, you can maintain your equipment, you know how to thing, you know how things work. And like that's kind of the basic like soul care thing is like, can you take care of yourself, right? Before we can lead others, before we can take care of others or a family or a church or a ministry, like we have to be able to care for our own souls, right? It's the classic airplane thing. Put your own mask on before you do something with else. Paul said the same thing to the Ephesian elders. He said, be on guard for yourselves and all the flock of which he's made, right? Why be on guard for yourselves first? Because Paul knew, man. Talk about a guy who had pressure in ministry all the time.
Yeah.
Be on guard for yourselves. And so then, if you will take responsibility for your own soul care, then like the next step is assembling like the people and the influences and the patterns and the practices around you that will help you to do that. But I talk about this in accountability all the time. There's no such thing as accountability except for self-accountability. There's no external partner can keep me faithful to my Bible reading or staying away from porn or daily exercise or like whatever it is I'm trying to be accountable for, if I will not hold myself accountable to it. Right.
I mean, that's true. Cause if you're losing self-accountability, you can just deceive or lie or figure out how to manipulate the accountability person. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
So that makes sense. All right. So dealing with the person then, do you have anything else on the failure side of things before I jump to the next thing?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. So you talk about theological anthropology.
This is
why I love talking to you, man. You go intellectual and I love it. So talk to us. What's theological anthropology? Break it down for
us. Okay. So this is basically, if we're going to care for our own souls, we have to know what it means to be a human being. Okay. We learn this from the Bible. Our theology informs everything about our faith, and it informs us about who we are as people, okay? So if you're going to care for your own soul, you have to know, okay, as a human being, we are physical creatures. That's how God's made us. He made us from the dust of the ground, okay? Which means taking care of ourselves physically is part of soul care. That is nutrition, exercise, hydration, sleep. Like, it's all the stuff that the success bros on Twitter talk about all the time or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, and I think pastors as a group are doing better in this than they have in previous generations. Because when I was growing up, pastors were legendary for having terrible physical health and being just not good. I think we're doing a lot better, but can you understand that we are stewards of our bodies in the same way Robert Murray McShane like destroyed his through overwork and through a stewardship failure? We're responsible for our bodies, right? God's given us this body to last prayerfully 80, 90 years so that we can serve him well 80, 90 years. So we need to steward it with that kind of thing in mind. So that means that you need some sort of habit of regular exercise. Like, you don't have to like be a marathoner or join a CrossFit gym or like, you know, be a gym bro or anything like that. Like, walking is amazing. Like, but you do have to get out and move.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm huge on sleep. Most Americans are sleep deprived. Yep. And sleep solves so many health problems. Okay. If you're always staying up late and always getting up early, and I know like guys who have young kids and lots of demands, it's hard to do this all the time.
Yeah.
But gosh, I like the guys that I coach who are performing at a really high level. A lot of times what I'm talking to them about is their bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, go to bed, man. Because am I more or less vulnerable to temptation if I'm sleep deprived?
Much more.
I'm much more vulnerable. I'm much more vulnerable to make bad decisions, to be in a crabby mood, to not be Christ-like, all this thing. And it's just go to bed.
Yep.
Like, we know this about our five-year-olds, right? It's like, you're crabby. You need to go to bed, go to bed, go to bed. And then in the morning, they're, you know, sunshiny because they feel good.
I'll give you an application on this. If you are walking through a season where you have little kids that, you know, and their sleep schedules are just crazy, my wife and I did something. You may not be able to do exact this, but I want to give you a different way to think about it at least. So my wife was naturally she would stay up late. I wanted to go to bed earlier and get up earlier. She naturally would want to stay up later and sleep in longer. We had the benefit of only having to have one income, so she didn't have to get up to go to work or anything. And so what we did is she would take everything. If the kid woke up anywhere near 4 a.m., it was my turn. Like, I would just get up, but that meant I went to bed at like 8 or 9 o'clock, and she would stay up till 12 or 1. That was natural for her. And she would sleep till 9 or 10 or whatever. But that's how we managed like the sleep schedules and the feeding schedules and stuff is, we still lost sleep, but we were getting more like 6 hours or 7 hours rather than 3 hours, because we were trying to take turns or whatever.
I think the other thing that I would say in the area of physical care is the importance of rest aside from sleep. In other words, you can't stay on the treadmill all the time. Like, you need a day off of that. Like, you need, like, there's been some attention to Sabbath practice here lately. John Mark Comer and some other guys are starting to push that, because we feel the constant, like, we have these things in our lives and they keep us connected and on all the time. Yeah. And then sometimes you take vacations and you schedule yourself, blah, 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 blah. And then you come back from your vacation exhausted. Like, you need to rest, man.
Yeah.
It's so important. And you just look at the way God set it up, like the Sabbath command, right? He made it for us, man. So that we could rest. So that's usually important.
How do you distance? So on those days, because I know a natural inclination as a pastor is like, yeah, but if something goes down, they're going to want to get a hold of me. Like, how do you set yourself up to be able to be off, or where you don't have to be the go-to person for a specific day, or whatever the application would be with that?
I mean, to me, that's a leadership development thing. Like, you cannot build a system that relies on you. Because, like, if you get hit by a Mack truck, what happens to your church? Yeah. What happens to your ministry? Like, you've got to distribute that stuff out, right? Because if the health of your church requires you to be on all the time, like, only God is up all the time, okay? You need 8 hours of sleep. You need a day off. Like, he's in heaven. He neither slumbers nor sleeps. He's on watch all the time, okay? You cannot be. And some of that is like, guys, you just have to stop playing God. And if your church members have God-like expectations of you, then you just got to correct that. You've got to correct it. So
that's good.
So I said physical. Yeah. So emotional is kind of the next one. And I think emotional self-awareness is really something that a lot of us, including me, have area to grow in. Okay. I asked a question one time. We were doing a prayer thing with some of our pastors. And this question occurred to me in the moment. I've used it a lot ever since. I asked them, what's your resting emotion? And what I mean is like a resting heart rate. A resting heart rate is how fast your heart beats when you're sitting there not doing anything. So I'm like, imagine you get to sit in a room for 15 minutes and let everything just sort of like settle down. What's the emotion that you're feeling underneath everything? Okay. And so our three answers were sad, anxious, and depressed.
Mm. So I was going to say, like, I don't even know that we even think what, like, I don't know if I could answer that right now, honestly. I may have to figure that out later.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing a emotional coaching process, and it's based on, their methodology is based on a couple books that Chip Dodd has written that I really like, The Needs of the Heart and The Voice of the Heart.
Okay.
It's really good, wise, applicable stuff. And one of the things I'm learning to do right now is to pay attention to what I'm feeling, even if the feeling is positive or if it's mild or whatever, is like, because these emotions are pointing you in a direction. If you're feeling hurt, it's because you need some attention. If you're feeling lonely, it's because you need to be known and you need to be intimate. Like, if you're feeling feelings of shame, it's because you need to matter and belong. And so, like, a lot of times men especially, like, will feel these feelings and then they're uncomfortable and we don't like them. And so they will do things to suppress the feeling rather than meet the need of the feeling, right? Mm. And so we'll anesthetize with overwork or sugar or porn or drugs or alcohol or gambling or like whatever it is. Like, we'll find ways to kind of manage that. But it's really not healthy. The healthy thing is if I'm feeling hurt, then I have to do things to get the relational attention that I need for the hurt that I'm feeling. Like, and that's another way of taking responsibility. But it all begins at least with awareness, because our emotions drive our activity, if whether we're paying attention to them or not. Emotions are so powerful for us because they're key motivators, right? And if we're not paying attention to our emotions, then we may have guilt or shame or hurt or other things driving us from below the surface and motivating the ways that we are doing things. And we've got to pay attention to that. Another thing I've learned about emotions is that emotions will attach themselves to thoughts. Mm-hmm. And thoughts can be true or false. So like, you're feeling anxiety. You're feeling anxiety. Oh my gosh, I've disappointed the personnel committee and they're thinking about firing me. Okay. All right. So that's the thought. Well, what if the personnel committee is not thinking about firing you and you just making that up out of your head?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, if you learn that, that undercuts the thought, undercuts the emotion. Okay. Yeah. Because our emotions will lie to us.
Yes.
I was talking to my neighbor. They're not Christians, and they have a pretty good marriage, but they have rocky spells. And so I talked to her. She was in the middle of a rocky spell, and she was all up in her feelings. She was crying, and she's like, "He never loved me." Blah, blah. Like, they've been together for 15 years, and they're great. And she's all blah 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 blah. And I said, "Okay, Barbara, just stop." She's like, "What?" I was like, "Let me tell you what the truth is. The truth is, you and Randy are great together. You love each other. You're doing well. Now, what happened is you had this misunderstanding, which he reacted poorly to, which you reacted poorly to, which he reacted poorly to, blah, 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 blah. And what you guys need to do is just settle down, come back together, and get back." And as soon as I did that, she just sort of said, nodded, stopped crying, said, "Oh, you're right." Okay. So we have to speak the truth to our feelings, because what we have to be aware of our feelings so we know what's motivating us. And sometimes they're lying to us.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to tell the truth to our feelings in order to get them to line up with how things actually are.
That is a common thing. So I've had several conversations where I'll hear, they just blah, 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 like whatever it is. And I'm like, have they said that to you? Well, no. Yeah. Okay. So you don't actually know. I know. No, you don't. Like, you're assuming you know, but you don't actually know that they are thinking that. Yeah.
And the fear and the dread and the unknown and all that kind of stuff that comes from those assumptions or intuitions or things that you think might be true that aren't actually true, like, whew, that it can be very destructive.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. So we're physical.
Yep.
We're emotional. We're relational. So, like, are you getting along with all the key people in your life? Right? Are you, do you have enough time with the key friends who are life-giving to you? I had a self-awareness moment with Pastor Jonathan back when I was in St. Louis. And we were just talking about people in our church, and we realized that we were spending all of our time with weak people, and it was draining us. Okay, because as human beings, we are permeable. Right. Remember that from chemistry, a permeable membrane is a thing that that substances can pass through. Okay. So as human beings, we're permeable. That means that we are affected by environments and moods and relationships around us. So if you spend your time with crabby people, it's going to affect you. Okay. If you spend your time with depressed people, it's going to affect you. And so we have to pay attention to our relational scenario. And it may be, maybe your marriage right now is not as life-giving as you want it to be or it's been in the past. Okay, well, then let's give some attention to that relationship and see if we can get it on healthier footing. And there are ways to do that, okay? Yeah. Anyway, you have any thoughts on the relational?
Yeah, what would be, just on the applications side, how do you... So I know one thing that I do is I will pay attention to when I meet with people, and I actually color code my calendar on if it's draining or not.
Oh, wow. That's great. That is great.
So I can actually see, was this life-giving or draining? And it's a quick reference to just go, okay, draining week with people. That makes sense why I'm exhausted right now. Or it's like, no wonder I'm on a high. Like, I had such great times with people throughout the week.
Yeah.
So I'll pay attention to that. If you know that there's a relationship out there, you're like, this is kind of falling by the wayside. I need to reconnect or make time for this. Do you have any like application to pay attention to that and what you might do with them to reignite that, or especially if it's a spouse? But...
Yeah. I'm single, so I can't tell you about the spouse thing. All like right. There are books, there are people that can help you. I would say my main learning is, like as a function of soul care being my responsibility, like I know the kind of people that I need in my life and all that kind of thing. If you wait for them to reach out for you, you're just going to wait. You have to take the responsibility for initiating the thing. Hey, let's get coffee. Send the text, make the call. And sometimes you're like, well, I don't always want to be the one doing it. Okay. Well then be lonely and without friends and by yourself and surrounded by, you know, we call draining people suck fish sometimes, you know, like remora, they attach themselves to the shark who's swimming and kind of they're like a drag on it.
Yeah.
Like, well, and you're going to have that in ministry because so much of what we do is helping weak people and helping them hopefully to become stronger. Right. But one reality is that if you're spiritually strong, spiritually weaker people will be around you to kind of absorb your vibe a little bit. But then sometimes they do that in a lazy way, is like just being around you, like they'll pick up the scraps from your meals without really working on themselves. And so you just have to be aware of that.
I'll give one spouse thing that is very easy, very simple. This happened this last week with my wife and I, is actually we like, I would say I love being around her maybe more than anybody else, which is probably good, but
that is good.
I could tell this has been, she's gone through some draining couple of weeks and stuff for different reasons. And, like my son just broke his arm. So we were, you know, in ERs and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah. And so, she just sent me a text and was like, I really feel like taco pizza. And I went, she does not want to cook today. She does not want to think about a meal. She wants to go to Casey's and just get a taco pizza. And so I just went, okay. Like, I was like, yeah, that sounds good to me. She's going to call me out. I made a comment back where I was like, I kind of feel like this. and she was like, her response was auto-corrected. I found out later she agreed. It felt like when she said at the moment, like, well, okay, I guess I'm going to do this for her. I don't know that the other side's happening, but it auto-corrected. She was fully intending both sides would happen. And so, we had taco pizza. Kids had a great time. We had a great time as a family. My wife felt refreshed because she didn't have to think about another meal. So easy application there.
Yeah. Two other aspects that I want to talk about.
Okay.
One is I want to talk about intellectual and spiritual.
Yeah.
Intellectual, like we are intellectual people, mm-hmm. and part of caring for our souls is thinking about things that are interesting and stimulating to us, right? I know most pastors have pretty good reading habits. We've learned the readers or leaders or whatever, but man, you don't always have to read like John Maxwell or like, you know, you don't always have to read like church success books, right? Like get out of that. Read something interesting. Pick up some biographies like things that you can learn about. One of my guilty pleasures is reading about infectious diseases. Mm-hmm. So when COVID hit, I was like, bro, I am ready for this. So I've read all the history of like typhus and AIDS and malaria and all of this. I'm just, you know, whatever reason, it's my own peculiarity. But I'm fascinated by, I learned a lot about cryptocurrency and sort of, you know, developing market kind of things that I'm interested in. It's a way of feeding my soul, okay. Right? And everybody has their little niche interest, whether it's like, you know, some guys are into cars or some guys are into like boating in water and sometimes fishing or like whatever it is.
Yeah. Military history for me. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Isn't that great stuff?
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. So do that, learn and enjoy it. And then the last area is spiritual. Now, when we think about soul care, we think about, oh, prayer and Bible study and journaling and fasting and all that kind of thing. And I'm for all of it. And we kind of know what that is.
Yeah.
But the reason I started at physical is because, like, when we're born, we come out and there we are. We're this blob of physical need. And then our own experience is emotion, right? We don't become spiritually aware in our own development until later. We don't become intellectually sophisticated until later. We don't learn about managing relationships until later. And so I think there's this sequence that we ought to follow in soul care. And I get this from the way that God cared for Elijah when he was depressed and fleeing from Jezebel, okay. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to the prophets of Baal, blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, goes into the, you know, I'm no better than my ancestors. It's better for me just to die. Okay. So what does God do first? Puts him to sleep. He lays down and he sleeps. Okay. Then the ravens come, give him some food. And the angel prods him, says, rise, get up and eat. Right. Right. Jar of water and a cake of bread. And then he sleeps some more. And then he eats some more. So what's God doing? God's giving him space to get physically together. Okay. And then says on the strength of that food, he takes a long walk down to Horeb, like days and days and days. And so what does he have? He has silence. He has exercise. He has fresh air and he has time to think.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
That's restorative, does all of that. So
I do want to acknowledge too, because I would say I'm in this type of season. I think other pastors are too, is that was off of a major victory, not a major defeat.
Yes.
And we got to be aware this doesn't just happen because bad things are happening. It can happen after really, really good things.
Yeah. And then, you know, and Jezebel comes as like, yeah, well, I'm going to kill you too. And then he gets all scared or whatever.
Yep.
Well, honestly, at the end of like big successful things, I remember back when I was doing worship ministry at the end of Easter or the end of Christmas, I would have this big emotional letdown afterward, right? Mm-hmm. And I was spiritually vulnerable during that time.
Okay.
And so Elijah, same thing. He gets that one little threat from Jezebel, who, you know, honestly could have killed him, but scared him, exhausted, depressed at the end of himself because he just expended all of that energy. All right. So physical and all those kind of things. He gets the space that he needs to think, okay? And then God comes and doesn't say, all right, here's what you're going to do, bend to the mountain, hear from God. God asks him a question. He says, what are you doing here, Elijah? And Elijah just vents. Blah, 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 blah. Gripey, 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 gripe. Okay? But God listens to him and lets him express himself. Right? See how patient the Lord is with that? And God's patient with us in the same way. Okay? Then God shows himself to Elijah. Right? There's the fire and the earthquake and whatever. And then the gentle whisper where God actually shows up.
Yeah.
Second time, God asks the same question, listens to him again. And Elijah says the same thing again because he wasn't done. He still had it in him, right? Then after all of that, then comes the instruction, all right, go back and here's what I want you to do. Here's the bend of the mountain, heard from God kind of thing. But it was at the end of this long sequence of kind of rebuilding Elijah's physical and emotional and spiritual strength from the ground up. And I think in church life, what we do is we tend to run straight to prayer and straight to Bible study. And when I'm dealing, especially with men, I'm like, no, you need to go to bed. You need to drink a lot of water. You need to get a good workout in tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You need to go outside and look at the sky. Do all that and then call me back.
Yeah, that's a different way to think of it. Everything you just said is that refreshes me. Like that is what I do to get refreshed. Yeah.
That's right. And here's the thing. We have this anthropology that we've inherited some from the modern age that says that we're all brain or all spirit and that our bodies, it's a kind of Gnosticism that modernism, sorry. And so like, you know, when I was growing up, like spiritual growth meant, oh, you're going to learn things and fill in your little workbooks and, you know, do your studies. And it's all like this sort of like mental stuff. It's like, but what about your emotions? And what about your body? And what about your relationships and everything like that? And I think if we would just pay attention to what the Bible teaches us about what we are, then we'll know how to care for ourselves properly. And maybe we'll know how to lead and care for other people properly too.
It's amazing how when you manage yourself, you can manage your household and you can manage the house of God.
Yeah. So,
oh man.
Oh, I think that sequence is important.
Yeah.
Rather than spiritual disciplines first, sometimes they need to come later. Sometimes they need to come last. But it's all part of the big picture of self-care for ourselves and for others. So,
yeah, man, you've convinced me for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else on this? I mean, that was heavily what we had talked about. We're in it. I don't want to miss anything.
Yeah. So I think it's our responsibility.
Yeah.
All the aspects of what it means for us to be human are things that we have to address. And I think there's kind of a sequence to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about the example of Jesus, you know, how he cared for his own soul, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, famously in the spiritual area, he would get up and go away and like he knew what he needed. He needed to pray. He needed to be with God. He needed to be with his Father. And so he did that. And everybody's like looking for him. He's like, where are you? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And like, I know that pastors and people in ministry get this. It's like, no, we need you there. Where are you? It's like, sorry, man, I can't do that right now. I gotta go make sure I'm okay first.
Oh, well, he would famously sleep in a boat in the middle of a storm too.
Yeah, that's right. So, he's like, no, man, I need a nap right now. Y'all deal with it.
Yeah.
Master, we're perishing. It's like, yeah, well, I needed a nap.
It's such a great example.
But like, y'all can perish when I get up from my nap, right? The other thing I think I would say is, man, when I am doing these things, when I'm exercising, I'm hydrated, my relationships are good, like, I'm a joyful man.
Yeah.
I'm living the kind of Christian life that I want to invite other people into, mm-hmm. and that others might see me and say, hey, that doesn't look so bad, right? Because if we're stressed out and exhausted, blah, come follow Jesus like me.
No, thanks.
I don't know that that looks so good.
Yeah.
And so like there's even an evangelistic and ministry related kind of thing. We ought to be living lives that other people see that they would aspire to, and that they see like, gosh, I wish I could be like that guy. Right. And it starts with that soul care. And, you know, and I think one of the great things about this is, this is the way God cares for us and wants to care for us. He cares for us as whole human beings, and not just for our productivity in ministry, and not just for, you know, our moral behavior, right? Like he's interested in the whole thing.
Yeah, for his own glory. Absolutely.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. Amen. And it is glorifying to God.
It is.
I can't remember who the quote is. The glory of God is man fully alive.
Mm. I don't know. I may have to look that one up.
That's yeah, good. We'll have to Google it and see who that is.
I love it, man. And hey, if you're not watching on YouTube and you're on a podcast, you might want to go over to YouTube, because you can just look out Mark's window there. That's not a picture. That's the real thing.
Yes.
Those palm trees.
That's a palm tree right here. Yeah, I'm in downtown West Palm Beach.
Yeah.
I don't know where you guys live, but you don't have to live there. You could live down
there. He tells me that every time we talk. You can live there. You don't have to.
I mean, God's everywhere. There's ministry needs everywhere. You might as well live somewhere that's, you know, that's nice.
that looks like that. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man. I do appreciate it so much, Mark. Like, this is incredibly beneficial to me. I know it's going to be incredibly beneficial to other people, so that we can keep running well and finish well, ultimately.
Amen. Amen. That's what I want.
Yeah. So what I want. Thanks for being on, man.
My pleasure. Great to see you.
See you next time.
Yeah, man.
I honestly could have talked to him for a long time, and we could have said nothing, and I could have just watched the trees sway back and forth in the window behind him, because it was pretty amazing and pretty calming. But I think what he had to say was so phenomenal. We have got to take care of ourselves. And I would say the older I get, the more I realize how important this is. I think when you're younger, you just kind of rely on just the energy you have and the passion to just go after it. And as you get older, you realize you really do have to take care of yourself. You have to maximize what God has given you. And you can't just rely on yourself. Frankly, we shouldn't be relying on ourselves at all. We should be relying on Jesus Christ and what he wants to do with us. But I think there is something to taking care of us. And there's really, really practical things. In fact, I would love to hear back from you as you see social media posts and whatever. If you want to comment on YouTube or maybe the various social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and there are just some ideas that come to mind of how you care for your soul, how you care for your body, how you care for your mind, I would love to hear that back from you, because Mark and I don't have all the ideas. We would love to hear how you do this, so we can even implement some of the things that you are doing, and that would help us or even other people. So make sure you do that. Thank you so much for checking this out. Look forward to our next episode, where we're going to try to continue this conversation. But otherwise, anything that we're trying to do, we absolutely want to encourage you, equip you, educate you, and empower you. And I hope that you experience that today. See you next time.